Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the Speedy Digest tonight. As we're kind of taking a little vacation, I guess you could say, as we don't have no guest tonight. But hopefully we get one for next week. And should be an awesome show tonight. And we're waiting for Kyle to come on. I'm not sure if he is, but I know Joseph isn't coming on tonight. So he has some commitment to do, but we're here, and we're going to report on what happened this week, as it's been a huge week in NASCAR racing news. But before I get into anything else, Glenn is with us, and just kind of talk a little bit about, you know, what you've done in the past week and all that.
This past week has been another kind of like battery recharging week. I mean, you know, Saturday night was definitely a shootout for sure, not even knowing, you know, what was going to happen there. And I was also covering the Bathurst 1000, which is like the Daytona 500, such as the V8 Supercar series. And that was actually a lot of fun to check out. In fact, I think it was my fourth Bathurst race that I've ever covered, because I started doing it in 2010 when they first showed on Speed Channel. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I even went to the library to get a couple of books, and I'm finally reading the autobiography for Michael Jackson, and my God, it's a good book. So, yeah, things have been going pretty well for me.
Pretty good, and I've been doing pretty good, too, just trying to keep it together since the Royals made it to the World Series earlier. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about some NASCAR racing, and I think we have a pretty good show tonight lined up, so should be awesome. But our first topic of the night is NASCAR handout penalties following Charlotte. You know, NASCAR avoided giving Denny Hamlin and Matt Kenseth a penalty, which, you know, but they handed out one to Tony Stewart and then to Brad Keselowski, and I'm going to start off with you, Glenn. Did you agree with the penalty? And secondly, if you were NASCAR, and what would you have done different, or would you kept it the same?
I definitely agreed with the penalty, because the one thing I was fearing was that they were going to take points away for this, and it was going to kind of alter the chase a little bit. Here was just taking the money away, and putting them on probation till November 12th, this is fine for them, because really, it was just another good night of, you know, fighting and all that. But the thing is that, you know, a lot of people are wondering, you know, hey, why did they give Tony Stewart a penalty? Well, if you take a look at the way Tony Stewart just suddenly reversed right into Brad Keselowski's car, if he was just backing up slowly and he accidentally bumped into Kenseth, then he'd be in the clear, but you saw the onboard camera that he literally, you know, throws the thing in reverse, maps the throttle, backs up, and rams right into Keselowski's nose. So NASCAR didn't really take a liking to that, and it takes a lot to get Matt Kenseth pretty mad, but I mean, if you get Kenseth mad, then you know that something is seriously wrong. As for changing anything, I probably would not have changed much, because, like I said, the penalties were just fine. As for, you know, Matt Kenseth, you know, he didn't throw any punches or do anything like that. He just charged in and tackled him. And since there really wasn't any, you know, fist punching or anything like that, everybody was just trying to get at one another, really, if there was a punch thrown, I would definitely give a penalty if somebody got hurt. But really, all in all, I think I agree with the penalty for sure.
Yeah, I think now I'm going to answer that question, or my own question I ask you. But do I agree with the penalty? No. You know, I see where NASCAR came from in giving Tony Stewart a penalty, and I respect that penalty. The one that they gave Tony Stewart, or I'm sorry, the one that they gave Brad Keselowski, was right. You know, I think those two guys should have been penalized, you know, because what they did on pit road, even though what Stewart did wasn't much. What I don't agree with here is why didn't NASCAR issue a penalty to both Matt Kenseth and Denny Hamlin? That's why I don't understand. And I'd like to have some more clarification on that why. If you go back earlier this year, there was some crew members that did the exact same thing what Matt Kenseth did, and they got penalties. Why not here? I mean, I know it was a scuffle. There wasn't really any punches thrown. But why no penalties when two crew members earlier this year did the exact same thing and got fined for it? I mean, I don't understand it. You know, I took a look at the video to give credit to Brad Keselowski somewhat. You know, Hamlin went through garage area two. From what I saw the video, they were both driving through there aggressively from what it looked like. And that's where I think NASCAR should have gave a penalty to the number 11 car and not just Brad or Tony Stewart. You know, I think they should have all four gotten some type of penalty through this. I mean, I agree with the penalty they gave both to Stewart and Keselowski, but I feel they should have gave one as well to the number 20 of Matt Kenseth and the number 11 of Denny Hamlin. You know, I mean, NASCAR did what they thought was fair, so, I mean, that's what they got. And, you know, what really sickens me is, I don't know if you saw Glenn or not, but the deal that was on Good Morning America on Monday morning, blaming Tony Stewart for the entire incident.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
And not giving him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I kind of want to get your thoughts on that too, Glenn, real quick.
Oh, gosh, yes. I saw that just before I was heading my way to astronomy. And, yes, from that report, they made it look like it was Tony Stewart. But remember, the only reason why that even got any play on Good Morning America was because, you know, it involved Tony Stewart. I mean, Randy Keselowski and such. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. Good Morning America, I mean, as much as I admire the show, because I do like Robin Roberts on there, she's great. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to reporting anything, especially sports, especially what they did with IndyCar when you know, Dan Weldon's crash happened at Vegas, which were about one day away from that anniversary, and also how they covered, you know, certain other races. I mean, if Good Morning America is going to add NASCAR or any of the series to their lineup, they at least need to look at the facts, Jack, and report it, you know, in the good light, you know, not just focus on the one driver that, you know, is big because yeah, we all know Tony Stewart's big, and plus he's been in the news recently because of that accident out there at Watkins, not Watkins Glen, but up there in New York. But still, you know, I mean, it's like, why blame the man in the Bass Pro Shops Chevrolet? I mean, come on.
It's just pissing me off. I'll just go and say it. Of how anything to do with any type of racing, even if it's IndyCar, Formula One, or whatnot, these news stations blame NASCAR. I saw a tweet Monday morning, I think it was, something to do with something IndyCar from 1970s, 1980s about marijuana. And Glenn, I'm sure you know about that because, yeah, mm-hmm. I saw the tweet, something about a team smuggling marijuana and they were using it to fund their racing operation from IndyCar from like the 70s. And this news outlet used the NASCAR hashtag in it. NASCAR
yeah.
has nothing to do with Formula One or IndyCar, whatever. It's different racing series, but I just, it makes me mad when these news outlets doesn't understand the difference between NASCAR, IndyCar, or Formula One, sprint car racing. If it happens during a sprint car racing, they blame NASCAR. If it happens in IndyCar, they blame NASCAR. They just need to find the head of headline. And I am not joking. That said, driver to number 20, Tony Stewart, punches Brad Keselowski between haulers. It's been 7 years or so since Stewart even drove the freaking 20 car. Like, really, look up back or don't go report on the sport. But it makes me mad when that happens.
Oh, yeah, me too. And in fact, you know what? I will back you up on that because anytime when they go right into, you know, doing something on NASCAR, IndyCar, or occasionally F1, I start to cringe a little bit because I wonder, ooh, are they going to do this? Are they going to be just, you know, what are they going to do? You know, it's a double-edged, you know, it's a double-edged deal. Now, the Today Show, believe it or not, on NBC, they did cover, I believe, they did cover one of the big wrecks, but, you know, they put it in a good light. So, yeah, A Good Morning America does it poorly. The Today Show occasionally gets it right on the nose.
I thought Brian Williams did good. Anyway, we're now joined by Kyle on the podcast. And, Kyle, what was your thoughts on the penalty?
First off, thanks for having me tonight, guys. I know you've been saying a lot about the Tony Stewart thing, what happened at Charlotte on Saturday night, and also with the news media pretty much bashing him on Monday morning, really for no apparent reason. I mean, I understand what Tony Stewart did. He was mad at Brad Keselowski for running into him for no reason. I mean, it's hard to judge that because, I've been reading a lot of stuff since then, and a lot of people have been saying that the old Tony Stewart is back, and I absolutely agree with that. And that's the passion that you see in him and the fire and the burning desire that he has. That it's almost back. I mean, you know, he had the time off, and what the mainstream media has done with this with Tony Stewart, he's just absolutely killed him with all the negative coverage. Because I know being at Watkins Glen the morning after that, the first accident back in August, I mean, you know, it was crazy in the media center, and you know, Fox News was there, CNN, everybody was there, and you know, in the coming weeks and months, I mean, the mainstream media just made Tony Stewart look like a villain. I mean, they have absolutely no knowledge whatsoever of racing, at least most of them do. And back to Monday, what really baffled me the most was to have USA Today reporters, of all people, go to a NASCAR reporter, go to a Jeff Gluck or a Nate Ryan, somebody who knows the sport. I mean, when I compare the mainstream media and then the racing media, racing just—they hit around the park. They got everything right, but when you compare that to mainstream, they don't have the facts. I mean, they see that the accident happened back in August, but they don't know everything that happened at that track at that night. I mean, is it Tony Stewart knows what he did, and Kevin Ward Jr. knows what he did, even though he's no longer here, he knows what he did. So, I mean, when you bring a mainstream media and just to sensationalize a story like that, I mean, it's uncalled for. And watching that abomination on ABC on Monday morning, I mean, I didn't see the clip till later, but I just don't know what happened there, what they were thinking. I mean, this is Robin Roberts, of all people, who would introduce that. I mean, that really, I mean, with her credibility, I mean, it's probably not going to affect NASCAR, unfortunately. But with her credibility, and then, of course, the reporter reporting out, I mean, there's so many flaws in that piece. I mean, they even say Kevin Harvick won the race. And, you know, going back to the penalties, I know you guys were talking about that earlier. It kind of baffled me with Denny Hamlin and Matt Kenseth not getting anything out of that. And, of course, with Kenseth putting Keselowski in a chokehold and Paul Wolf doing the same to Kenseth. So this whole situation has been nuts. I mean, I think, you know, it was great, great for the fans Saturday night, but what they had to do, though, what the mainstream media did with Monday, and even in general, I mean, when I first heard of Tony Stewart being penalized, I mean, first thing my thought was, and I saw it on Twitter, was the mainstream media going to find a story out of this. and not in a good way either. So, I mean, there's still a lot of questions to be answered. And, you know, I mean, we pretty much we know what's going on with the investigation that happened. You know, we had the Ontario County, New York thing. And one more thing, and I'll finish up on the subject, is what the media, mainstream media, needs to know is that the accident that Tony Stewart was part of back in August had nothing to do with NASCAR. Okay, that Tony Stewart's a NASCAR driver, but had nothing to do with being on a NASCAR car. It was completely separate. It was on his own time. He wanted to race because that's what you're born to do, is to race. So that's my two cents on the subject.
I totally agree. And I mean, I just some of the stuff here lately, I just cannot believe at all. But all right, we're going to move on now to Dogecoin will be returning to the number 90 of Josh Wise this weekend at Talladega. And, you know, they really did an interesting deal when they were on the card last time. So I'm going to start off with Kyle on his thoughts on the matter of Dogecoin returning to that team.
Yeah, I think it's a good move for Dogecoin coming back in that car. You know, you've seen all the support they've gotten, that Josh Wise has gotten, that Phil Parsons racing team. And, you know, with all the diecasts that are made and the shirts, it's just to make it happen. I mean, it's a great story. And you know, and when we go to Talladega Sunday, there's going to be 43 drivers entering that race, and all 43 have a shot, including Josh Wise. So, I mean, it can be done. I mean, by the end of the day, I mean, it's probably going to be a crazy race. We don't know for sure, but that's what it's coming down to on Sunday. So I think it's a really good move for Josh Wise. You know, I think they had the sponsor at Talladega in May and also at Sonoma in June. So I think it's really good for them, and you know, maybe it'll lead to a better opportunity for him. I mean, he's in decent equipment. It's not terrible when they can run the whole race. Just have to. You know, they're a single car operation, and I think when you have that, you know, you're definitely going to be behind a little bit, but he's doing a good job with what he has. So I think this is good to see him at least get another sponsor, and hopefully I think he's going to run the whole race. So good for Josh Wise.
Yeah, you know, seeing those pulling back again, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if that car is up there at the front. Battling for a top five. I mean, that car isn't going to be too hard to a spot on the racetrack for sure.
Yeah, I think it's pretty neat that Dogecoin is returning. And, you know, I mean, that sponsor, you know, really came out to full promote Josh and that entire team and what they can do. And so it's kind of neat to see him back on that. And next news topic is Jenny Macek to make a second attempt with Rad Racing and in the Sprint Cup Series. So I'm going to start off with Glenn this time on his thoughts.
Good to see him back again, and that's definitely something that the team needs. In fact, RIB Racing coming back to the Cup Series for this race, I think it'll be pretty good because, you know, Nemechek is pretty good at reciprocated racing. I think it's gone, you know, a little underrated in a way, but we'll see if we can get that 29 car into the race first.
Kyle?
RIB Racing's a good team. I mean, you see the Nationwide over the last few years, and they have the speed. I mean, with their Cup program, I mean, they ran with Nemechek at Daytona back in July, and then they ran with Matt Crafton at Indianapolis. The issue I see with that is, you know, RIB is a good team, but they, I mean, if they're willing to hook up with somebody in qualifying and get the speed, I mean, that was their issue, I think, back in July at Daytona. They just couldn't hook on with anybody, and if they did, it wasn't fast enough. And, of course, with Matt Crafton, I don't think Crafton tested with them. I think a test would be beneficial for that team. I mean, I know they don't have the money, but at least because, you know, with Matt Crafton going into Indianapolis, you really couldn't, you know, I didn't get much of a chance to make the race. I mean, we had high expectations, but I think he just needs a little more track time, maybe Kester, so he got his feet wet. And so, I mean, I think it's a good opportunity for Joe Nemechek and a good ride. He's not the starting part. And, you know, you never know how many more opportunities he has behind a quality ride. So, you know, he doesn't have to start in park, like I said, with that, because that 66 team has start in park, I think, a few times this year. So, and if they have ran, they've been multiple laps down in the race. So, this is not Michael Waltrip Racing equipment either. And, you know, and Michael running the 66 this weekend. So, I think good move for Joe Nemechek. You know, it kind of breaks up his races, you know, doing the truck. He actually run double duty as well for the truck race as well. So, I think it's a good move for Nemechek this weekend.
Great move for them, too. And, you know, it should be interesting to see, you know, hopefully they make the race. You know, that's something that they've kind of been struggling with here lately. So that'll be interesting to monitor during qualifying. All right, we're going to head into our next topic of discussion. And Denny Hamlin, Jackman, Nate Bowling suffered an injury Saturday night that showed a torn tricep. Bowling will be out for the rest of the year, but the team hopes that he'll be back in 2015 season. I don't know if you saw the incident, Kyle, but kind of give us your thoughts of what you saw whenever that happened.
Yeah, it was unfortunate when it happened. And, I mean, that pit crew, Denny Hamlin, is the one of the best in the sport over the last 3 years. And I know you know you see the pit stops, and I think they won a pit crew challenge in 1 year. So, I mean, they're flawless, that whole pit crew. I mean, they could definitely find somebody to replace to fill out a season at Jackman. But you know, there's nothing like the original product, as I say. But you know, he needs to recover, because you know his pit crew guys are athletes, and I don't care what anybody says, they're athletes, because they have to go through training every single day through the week to get ready and get conditioned, so they can do 400 miles and do 4 or 5 pit stops in that case. So it just depends on the race length, of course. But yeah, I mean the pit crew. I mean, you know, the pit crew is such a vital part of the team, and I mean without a good pit crew, I mean you're not really going to be up front unless you have a really good car. You have to fight your way back every race, but I mean the pit crew is so vital. And for this 11 team, I mean, they have Talladega coming up, and they won there in the spring, and they've been good on restricted play tracks this year. So I think really for them, I think the more crucial part will be if they do make it after this weekend when they go down to Martinsville and Texas and Phoenix. I mean, JGR cars have been in there, and they have been running decent. So I mean, I saw that Atlanta too. They had just enough speed to be up there, and they had the good pit stops that got them up there as well. So I think it's a little bit of a loss for Denny Hamlin, but should not hinder the team at all.
Glenn?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to affect the team too much. I mean, the 11 pit crew have been pretty much the fastest pit crew of this year. I mean, my God, clocking off 12 and 11 second pit stops. I mean, man, they are definitely athletes. Yeah, I hope to see him back next year. I mean, I'm pretty sure that he'll be back next year. I mean, come on, you can't keep a good athlete down, you know.
Good point. And so hopefully he recovers soon. And hopefully we'll see him back at the pretty soon. So, all right, our next topic before we get into our race news is that Diabetes Association announced a renewal with Roush Fenway Racing. So I'm going to start with Glenn on this.
It's good that they renewed their association with Roush Fenway Racing. I mean, at least that's a sponsorship that they can use, and so if they still have to fill in a couple of races and stuff like that, they can sponsor some of the other cars. So you know, good for them.
Yeah, it's a good
Kyle?
Move for Roush Fenway Racing. It's a good move for them, for Roush Fenway, because of course you have Ryan Reed going to be back next year, and to bring the awareness of diabetes to everybody. I mean, it is hard to deal with. I mean, I know people who suffer from it. It's not fun. I know it's, you know, having low blood sugar and, you know, really taking a turn for the worse. And you just don't see the NASCAR. You see the IndyCar as well with Charlie Kimball and Chip Ganassi racing on that side, racing with insulin. So, you know, it's really important to bring these things up because, you know, people suffer for them. And we're not, you know, like I guess I know people, and it's personal. And, you know, it's not easy what they go through. And you got to keep your sugars up. And I know Charlie Kimball suffers from it, and I'm not sure about Ryan Reed, but I know Diabetes Foundation has been with Ryan Reed for a few years, even back in his ARCA days. So, good move for Roush Fenway. They need, especially when they need the sponsorship, and Ryan Reed has it to back them. I think, you know, for Ryan Reed, should be a better year for him next year in that car, because he'll have a year under his belt. But we'll see what happens.
All right, and now we're going to move over into our race review from the Sprint Cup Series race this past weekend at Charlotte. And trying to find the right lap has kind of sprung up on me. But anyway, Kevin Harvick captured the victory by leading 162 total laps of the night. And finishing in second is Jeff Gordon. And third was, surprisingly, Jamie McMurray, who had a great night behind the wheel of his number one McDonald Chevrolet. And, you know, Kevin Harvick finally seals the deal after, you know, dominating races, but falling up short. I mean, that team should have way more wins than they do right now this year, but, you know, sometimes mechanical problems struck them or whatever reason and just kind of set them back a little bit.
Yeah, it was a really interesting night in Charlotte, to say the least. And Kevin Harvick didn't even win the race and lead the most laps. So, you know, there's just so much to take from the race on Saturday night. And, you know, and I want to ask, you know, Kyle Larson was in there as well. Had an issue there late. Actually hit the wall. I think he had probably the fastest car out there, a little better than Kevin Harvick. But once he hit the wall, kind of killed his night. But he came back to finish sixth in the end after pitting on the last caution. So that kind of helped him. Team could pull away the fenders and fix some damage on the car. Mm. But, you know, I mean, I think the whole Keselowski Hamlin Kansas thing pretty much just stole the show Saturday night. And I was pretty jealous of whoever was there. And you know, there's just so much going on. Man, it's crazy. And, you know, with Kevin Harvick, I mean, it's the breeze now. Really in the Talladega, and along with Joey Logano. Because Talladega is going to be a big race coming up, but you know, we'll talk about that. But, you know, there's just so much stuff going on. It's crazy. And, you know, the 14 finally put it together. They won a race finally. So it's good momentum builder for that team. And, I mean, what I've been hearing is Kevin Harvick wants to start in part of Talladega. So just start the race and run two laps and get out. But that's his words. But, you know, there's just so many storylines that you can take from Charlotte. It's crazy.
You know, when the race was pretty good for the most part, but it was really that ending. I mean, I don't know who the director was over there at ESPN, but we should have been focusing primarily on the fight there because about the time that it was about to get good, we had to go over to Kevin Harvick to see his burnout. But I think a lot of fans probably hated this race because, obviously, the first 25 laps were put on ESPN News, which, unfortunately, a lot of people, as I've said in past shows, do not get. It doesn't matter what cable provider or satellite provider you have. Some of these people don't even get that. Now, if the first 25 laps are moved to ESPN1, like, you know, normal ESPN, then I think that there wouldn't be as much of an uproar because everybody has that, or even ESPN Classic, or for that matter, you know, ESPN 360. But the fact that they didn't move the race over to one of those stations, it was really bad, and it actually led to like four people's accounts getting suspended that night because they were busy creating their lynch mob for ESPN.
Actually, I don't think, and Kyle can correct me if I'm wrong if he watched it, but that was just terrible. I mean, they said that they moved over to ESPN 3, which obviously when I went on there, there was never a link for it. It wasn't on ESPN3 like they said it was. The preseason heat game, you know, was gone in overtime, as well as the football game that was regularly scheduled on ABC. So, I mean, it's a bad situation for them. They should have handled it better. You know, but, you know, people complain about it. And, you know, one of the things when this comes up is, you know, if they cut the football game off to put NASCAR on and regularly scheduled, if NASCAR, because it's happened many times before, where it runs over, then they would have to cut the end of the finish of the race off to start the football game in, you know, the regular time slot. I've never seen them cut the end of a race off or end of a football game off and move it to another channel to start NASCAR. So, you know, whether, you know, they continue to do it like this, or if NASCAR runs over and then cut the end of finish off, then no one can see the end of the race, you know. I mean, that's just the way I feel about it. You know, I mean, I'd rather see an end of the race than the beginning of the race if I had to choose. And, you know, I mean, if you want to see pre-race, you know, it's great. I just listen to MRN or PRN until the race comes on TV or whatnot. You know, I mean, don't. I mean, I get sick of the complaining, but really and truly, I enjoy MRN and PRN commentary, pre-race commentary, that is a lot better than I do ESPN, because you get a wide range of drivers, and they're not in a, you know, a strict window as TV is. I mean, you know, with TV, you know, they have to get it in and done. You know, the radio can take their time. And so that's why I like about the radio other than the TV broadcast.
Yeah, I agree with you, Brett, about that. I mean, the issue I see is, and I see this with a lot of races, when you sometimes you see just the post-race, you can interview the winner, it's pretty much a production decision. I remember there have been drivers mad before. I mean, I think ESPN handled that very unprofessionally and unprepared as well with Saturday night. I mean, mm-hmm. they need to find a way in case that happens, kind of like a crisis management thing right there with media. You know, if the worst case scenario happens, they need to make sure that it gets on somewhere. And I know a lot of people don't get ESPN3, just some people who have it, like myself and other people who have it, because it comes with the cable. So. And like you said, Brett, I like the radio anyway better. I mean, they do tell a lot, but without TV though, I mean, I know I read a really good blog by Jeff Gluck, is that, you know, you miss so much if you're not watching the broadcast. I mean, sometimes you know more, the viewer knows more than the reporter, and that's not always the case, but in that instance it was. So with the broadcast thing, I mean, you know, with ESPN and ABC, I mean, the last 3 days it's been a stab in the back to NASCAR. It's just ridiculous.
And I mean, you know, usually, you know, they're pretty good at it, but, you know, lately they've been kind of slacking at it. And, you know, we're seeing it right now with FS1. Well, I'm not going to say Fox Sports 1 necessarily, but, you know, I don't know if you've seen, guys, the lineup for next year, but FS1, Fox Sports is really pushing on biting too much than they can chew, because, I mean, next year I think we're going to see a lot of this when events are on Fox Sports in 2015.
Yeah, I just want to add something quick here. You know, like you said, with Fox Sports 1 next extra. I mean, same thing with NBC Sports Network. A lot of people don't have that network, and they're going to need. I think you said you don't have it as well, Brett. So, I mean, when you come into that, that's going to be tricky. And I actually have my apartment right now. I don't get either network, so that's going to really help. And I do have Fox Sports, so I do have NBC Sports Live Extra. But, I mean, those things are 40 seconds behind it, at least. So I think with Extra, I hope more people can add those two networks to hopefully many, many cable providers so people can watch the races.
And I saw a tweet today and on my private Twitter account where the ratings have been really low for the, and I know this has nothing to do with NASCAR, but for the NLCS that's actually airing on Fox Sports 1, I believe, for the first time this year. And, I mean, a lot of people don't have Fox Sports 1. And so, I mean, there's a few, but not as many as Fox. And so, you know, it's really hurting ratings. And I think next year, and we're seeing if it's IndyCar right now. I mean, IndyCar is drawing in, I believe, a 0.3 around in there per race. I mean, and that's on NBC. I mean, and the ratings have been low across the board all this year. It's going to be interesting to see what NASCAR ratings are going to be next year and how much lower they're going to be compared to 2014 this year. And Kyle had an issue with his phone and has dropped out. So he's off. But anyway, we're going to move on over and review the NASCAR Nationwide Series race for the Drive for the Cure 300 at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, where Brad Keselowski took home the victory after leading only 22 laps of the event. And finishing in second was Kyle Busch, and third was Matt Kenseth. So, Glenn, if you watched this race, what was your thoughts on it?
I did, and, you know, it was another one of those races where the dominant car didn't win, but, man, Brad just came on at the very end of the race and just, you know, took home a very good win. And, you know, once again, it was a race between the Cup Series guys, which I know it doesn't please a lot of fans. I mean, I think that it used to please them a lot when we referred to them as the Bushwhackers, and they were, they were only running this to kind of like fill the field and stuff like that. But now it's gotten to that point where it's like, again, so, you know, good job for Brad Keselowski, and they get a couple weeks off, which I think is well deserved, because I think the Nationwide Series should be thankful that they only run a Talladega once and not twice like we do in the Cup Series.
No doubt. And you know, it should be an interesting race at Texas Motor Speedway when they return in 2 weeks. So interesting right there. All right, now we're going to head over into the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series news items, where, you know, here's an interesting one where Eric Phillips is moving over to the NASCAR Nationwide Series with Kyle Busch Motorsports next year. So, Glenn, give us your thoughts on that.
Well, that's kind of interesting, but also it definitely feels like a step up to go over there to the Nationwide Series. And Eric Phillips, that's the crew chief, right?
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be interesting for Eric as well. You know, I mean, he's had a ton of success with the team over in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. So, you know, I think it's a good move for him. And it's going to be interesting to see what all switched or do next year over at Jugger's Racing, because, you know, I'm sure that Adam Stevens will be moving up to the Sprint Cup Series with one of the teams since they're expanding to a four-car operation next year. So, Cody Ware, who made numerous stops for Rick Flair Racing in the NASCAR Nationwide Series, will be making his NASCAR Camping World Truck Series debut this weekend. And give us your thoughts on that.
All right. All right. So, who's the driver again that's making his debut?
Cody Ware.
Okay. I don't know. I would have to see how well he does. I mean, we definitely have a bunch of newer drivers on the entry list, and interesting to see Milka Duno is on here driving the number one truck. I think this will be her first start in a truck for sure, and she did pretty well in the ARCA series racing here at Talladega. So I'll be interested to see how well she does. And of course we got Ryan Ellis, Derek White, and all these other guys, and also good to see Chris Fontaine back as well.
That's right. And 37 trucks make up the entry list for the annual Fred 250 powered by Coca-Cola at Tony Super Speedway. Some of the drivers on here include Milka Duno, Michael Afrano. Cody Ware is listed in the number 005 truck. Sam Stromas only drives the 05. Cody Ware would have to use the number 5 if they want to race, so that's what that situation is. Corbin Forrester is on here. Ron Horner Jr. will be making another appearance in the number 9. Armor, Vienna, Sausages, and Bad Boy Buggy Chevrolet for NTS Motorsports. Mason Mingus will pilot the number 15 once again. Some of the other drivers on it include Daniel Suarez, who will be driving the number 35 for my mind went blank here for Lintron Racing and the Aris sponsorship Toyota. Some of the others include Eric Jones, Darrell Wallace Jr., Clay Greenfield, Mike Harmon, Chris Fontaine, and some of your other NASCAR Camarillo Truck Series regulars are all on it. Derek White will be in the number 50, while TJ Bell will move over to the number 56 for that team. So kind of interesting swap right there. And so it should be an interesting race with all the drivers on here. And actually, one truck will be going home, so we haven't saw a full field of trucks on the entry list for a while now, so that's always good to see. And now we're going to move over to preview the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series race this weekend at Talladega Super Speedway for the 46th annual GEICO 500. And not really much changes around here, except maybe for some of the sponsors. As Brad Keselowski will have sponsorship from Wicked Apple Ale. Kind of interesting. Jim McMurray will be in the Black Cessna Chevrolet in his number one. Golden Corral will be as a sponsorship on the number 7 of Michael Annette. Black & Decker will be featured on the number 9 of Marcus Ambrose. Some of the others include Ryan Blaney will pilot the number 12 SKF Ford for Team Penske Racing. Clint Boyer will be in his number 15 Pink Lemonade 5-Hour Energy benefiting LBDC. Some of the air paint schemes that will have different colors include Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and his Cargill and Sam's Club Ford. Kyle Busch will pilot his Halloween M&M Toyota. Also, some of our sponsors include Alex Bowman in the Dustless Blasting Toyota Camry for BK Racing. Jeff Gordon will be back in his number 24 Exalta Chevrolet for Hendrick Motorsports. And some of the others are pretty much the same as we go down through here. As Kyle Larson will be back in the number 42 car, but they'll have a different look on the side of the Chevrolet as Energizer will come on board. Some of the guys on here include Michael Waltrip in the number 66 with sponsorship from my8bitstory.com Toyota. And Dale Earnhardt Jr. will be in the number 88 Diet Mountain Dew Chevrolet. And as we talked about earlier, Dogecoin and Reddit.com will be on the number 98 Ford for Josh Weiss. And Carl Edwards will have the Subway colors on the side of his Ford for Roush Fenway Racing this weekend. So should be an awesome show at Talladega. It's going to be nuts. It's going to be wild. And something else that's wild, I'm going to turn it over to Glenn for the Open Wheel Report. So take it away.
Well, thank you very much there, Barasta. But let me just go ahead and just say my two cents about Talladega really quickly. Talladega is going to go one of two ways. Either we're going to see the big one at the very end of the race, everybody's going to go nuts, or we're going to see multiple big ones. I mean, there's so many question marks that I think that everybody's going to be going through packets of Tums, Imodium, you know, something to settle out their stomach. But I think at the very end, we're gonna end up having like three bottles of Tums on the floor, and we'll see who ends up being the eight chasers that go to the next two races, three races, because we got Martinsville, Texas, and then we have Phoenix. So with that out of the way, and on that bombshell, let's go over to the F1 series really quickly, as the F1 series took to the track for the very first time in Sochi, Russia, for the Russian GP. No surprise here, Lewis Hamilton took home yet another victory this year in winning the Russian GP, also clinched Mercedes' very first Constructors title. That's right. It's the first time ever that Mercedes has ever won a Constructors title. Now, that is a little bit hard to believe, but you have to remember that teams like Ferrari, Honda, and Renault have won this particular title. So let's take a look at the finish order and see where your favorite driver finished. Lewis Hamilton won the race. His teammate Nico Rosberg finished second. And how about Valtteri Bottas in the Williams Mercedes finishing third? Good job for him. Jenson Button finished fourth. Kevin Magnussen finished fifth. The McLaren teammates there finishing fourth and fifth. Fernando Alonso finished sixth. Daniel Ricciardo finished seventh. Eighth was Sebastian Vettel. Ninth was Kimi Raikkonen. And rounding out the top ten in the Force India Mercedes was Sergio Perez. Further on back we go. Felipe Massa finished 11th. Nico Hülkenberg finished 12th. Jean-Éric Vergne finished 13th. Danny Cavia finished 14th. Esteban Gutierrez finished 15th. Adrian Sutil finished 16th. Roman Grosjean 17th. 18th was Pastor Maldonado. And 19th was Marcus Ericsson. Two cars failed to finish the race. Kamui Kobayashi in the Caterham Renault due to a brake failure. And Max Chilton retired after nine laps. No word on what happened there. Also of note, Hülkenberg, Magnussen, Chilton, Maldonado all dropped five grid positions for an unscheduled gearbox change. Maldonado was also given another five grid spot penalty as a remainder of his 10-place penalty for the engine change at the last round. So now the F1 series gets a couple weeks off before they get back to racing again on November 2nd. It is the Circuit of the Americas for the running of the 2014 Formula One United States GP. So for a while, F1 is back on the paddock. Meanwhile, some rumblings in IndyCar because, dig this, Racer.com, let me say it again, Racer.com has spy shots of IndyCar's brand new aero kit at Circuit of the Americas. In fact, just today and a couple of days ago, Chevrolet was testing its brand new aero kit. Now, I'm not going to reveal any technical information, but I can tell you, I can describe what the car looks like. All right, so picture the actual DW12 right now, the way it looks. What they've done, the side pods have gotten rid of its roundish kind of shape, and they now have sort of a squarish shape that's a little more flat and goes over the wheel a little bit more. The tail section has more of a tank-like shape to it. The rear wing plate has like three tiers to it, so it's split in two places and sectioned off into thirds. And then the interesting thing is that the front wing borrows a page from the F1 series, where it kind of has like this boxier look. The wing tips that kind of went back into the snout a little bit, those are now trimmed down a little bit. And pretty much Chevrolet's new aero kit, if this is what they're going to do, looks really, really nice. And granted, people, the pictures that you will see have been blurred a little bit, but I think that was done on purpose so that nobody can see the actual lines and try to copy it or anything like that. We've seen mock-ups, and now we finally have an image here. So now it'll be Honda's turn to bring out their aero kit. So we'll see if these are the official ones or they decide to change them later on in the year. Now, over to the 2015 schedule, which has not been officially released as of yet. In fact, there are still some tracks that are currently still getting their dates taken care of, but it looks like a couple of dates have been confirmed. So let's go down the order. And after Belle Isle, this is where the dates I have to confirm still. So basically the last couple of races after Belle Isle, I'll have to confirm with the actual tracks. So right now, as it stands, we have the Brasília Indy 300 at the Autódromo Internacional Nelson Piquet in Brazil. That will be on March 8th. March 29th will be the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. April 12th will be the brand new race, the Indy Grand Prix of Louisiana at NOLA Motorsports Park. Then April 19th, it's the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach as they race in the streets of Long Beach, California. So after the Honda Indy Grand Prix of Alabama at Barber Motorsports Park, the Andy Blitz Grand Prix of Indianapolis. That will happen at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway 2 Open Speed Weeks the week leading up to the Indianapolis 500, which will go to May 24th, the 99th running out of the Indianapolis 500. And then it's off to the Chevy Indy Duel in Detroit, which is May 30th and 31st. This is going to be the only doubleheader that we have. And then here's where the dates are a little bit confusing. I believe Texas Motor Speedway confirmed their date as June 6th, so they will be after the Belle Isle GP. And then here's where the dates get a little bit interesting. Auto Club Speedway with the Mass TV 500 used to be the championship assigned race. Now it could be moved to June 27th, which is about 1 week after the vintage car races. And if they're smart, which I know they are, they would put the IndyCar series with the vintage cars, and that would be a win-win situation for both series. So June 27th is the technical date right now. Then August 2nd would be the Honda Indy 200 at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, and then we would crown the champions at the Indy Grand Prix of Sonoma in Sonoma, California. Now, there's a few tracks that I did not mention here. I did not mention Milwaukee. I did not mention Pocono. I did not mention some of the other facilities, but right now, those dates have yet to be confirmed, and we still don't even know if Pocono is going to be back on the schedule, because a lot of people are saying that that's not going to be there. I think so. I think it's not going to be there also. As for Milwaukee, I'm pretty sure that they will be back on there, hopefully, because, you know, they drew a huge crowd this year, so hopefully Milwaukee's on there, but that is just a tentative look at what the 2015 schedule could hold for us. I mean, the first races, you know, Brazil, St. Petersburg, Louisiana, Long Beach, Alabama, and Indianapolis, and the duel in Detroit, and Texas, those are the dates officially confirmed. So we at least have some races on there. Question is, how many are we actually going to have? So we'll find that out later on in the months to come. Also, I know this is not open wheel, but really quickly, the Bathurst 1000 took place for the VA Supercar Series as they raced on the Bathurst circuit, and the win went to Chaz Mostert in the Ford Pepsi Max crew car. So let's take the top 10 really quickly and see if your favorite Australian or see your favorite Aussie finished. So Chaz Mostert, won the race. James Moffitt finished second in the 360 Norton Hornets car. The 22 car of Nick Percat in the HHA Racing, or the 222 car, finished third. Will Davison in the Airbus Motorsport VA car finished fourth. Jamie Winkup in the Red Bull Racing Australia Holden finished fifth. Mark Winterbottom finished sixth in the Ford Pepsi Max crew car. Todd Kelly in the Jack Daniels Racing car finished seventh. Rick Kelly finished eighth. Fabian Coulthard finished ninth, and rounding out the top ten was Craig Lodies in the Triple H Red Bull Racing Australia. Red Bull Racing Australian Holden Commodore. Their next race is going to be in a couple of weeks. They're going to be heading to the Gold Coast, Gopher Paradise, for the Castrol Edge Gold Coast 600. That is about 7 days away, October 24th through the 26th. Get your tickets right now at va-supercars.com. www.ltwreport.au/events. So that's going to wrap it up for the Open Wheel Report, and also for a little bit of reports from the VA Supercar series.
All right. Well, it was a fantastic show tonight. Thank you, Glenn, for joining us. And also thank you, Kyle and Amanda, for stopping by. And hope everyone has a great rest of the evening. And enjoy the week. Enjoy the race on Saturday. It's going to be a good one. And hope everyone stays safe. Thank you. And hope you all are here next week listening to us as well.